Welcome back. Well, the UN Conference on Trade and Development has launched its 2019 report, which has found that the Sustainable Development Goals set in 2015 will only be met at the targeted 2030 deadline if a global Green New Deal is in place. The organization's senior economist, Diana Barraclough, joins us now with more perspective on the gravitas of the matter and what it means for economies moving forward. Thanks so much, Diana, for joining us this evening. So looking at this new global Green Deal that's being proposed. I mean, it's looking at public institutions starting to finance programs. You say that there's a political will at the UN level filtering down. Is that translating?
Well, first of all, what did we see last week? We saw young people all around the world giving a very clear message to us as, you know, the mature people who are in a position to do something about it. It's filtering to young people. You know, they've got the message, and now we have to wake up and do something about it. And young people are telling us that, you know, they've had enough. We need to wake up. They're worried about environmental issues. What I'm bringing to the table today is this argument from the team at UNCTAD that this environmental existential problem of, you know, our existence is threatened within 10 to 12 years, we will not be able to change the path of CO2 emissions. At the same time, we have this economic crisis, and the two are linked. It's not coincidence that they come at the same time. So I think that's very important. We're living in this double crisis. In fact, we have on the one hand an age of anxiety. It's not just in South Africa. I mean, I feel there's a, I read this, you know, many concerns about the environment, the economy, social concerns here in South Africa, but other countries around the world too, expressing this sense of anxiety as we have precarious employment, no confidence that, you know, the economy will be better, no confidence that people's lives will be better in the future. And this is coming at the same time now as a real concern about, you know, what's happening to the environment.
Diana, so spell it out for us. How do policies, so having the right policies in place, actually work to scale up the resources that are needed to drive a public sector investment push?
Listen, the first thing is, you know, why are we saying it needs to be public sector? What I think has been very apparent over the last two decades is that the expectations we had that private sector would, you know, step in and beef up investment, it just simply hasn't happened. In South Africa, as in all countries, even as profits were rising, profits go up like this, and you look on the chart, investment is going down. So even in profitable activities, there's not the investment we need. Now let's move to the kind of activities that we need for the Sustainable Development Goals, you know, infrastructure, clean water. These are not profitable activities for the most part, or if there is profit, it's a long time coming. So we're not going to see the private sector invest in that. And in fact, we haven't. You know, when you think about even public-private partnerships, that people had, you know, high hopes for these, well, not UNCTAD, but, you know, there were arguments that this was supposed to be a way to blend the private sector with public sector support. That's not getting the resources either. So we need to go back to the public sector. And in fact, this is an old lesson. You know, we learned this from President Roosevelt in the United States in the 1930s. We learned this from every Asian tiger that went through industrialization rapidly in the 1950s. And we learned it from today's advanced economies who did it in the past. You need public investment for those moments when it's risky. You can't see where the returns are.
So, Diana, how is this being digested in a country like South Africa that's already working with a strained budget just to keep the lights on, quite literally, and where decarbonizing an economy requires a significant rise in public spend?
Well, look, I think there's no choice. You know, dealing with the carbon crisis is not a choice. We have to do something about it, or the choices will be made for us. So the question is, you know, what do we do about that? Now, in South Africa, you do have development banks, which are investing in green technologies and trying to make a move into more renewable energies, but they're desperately underfinanced for the task. I mean, the two South African development banks have assets, loans, about the level of 1% of GDP. Now, compare that to China or Brazil, countries with really a more concerted effort behind, you know, renewable transformation. They have development banks of 12 and 14% of GDP. So Africa does have development banks that are trying to do this, but they need a lot more resources behind them.
Yeah.
At the other hand, you know, there's a problem that, you know, South Africa has a highly financialized economy, which means that it hasn't gone down the right kind of path in terms of productive investment. But having said that, when you have that economy, it does give you something that you can use. If you directed this expertise and this finance into a more sustainable and productive path, and this is where, you know, there can be a win-win here.
You talk about a win-win. What kind of support are we looking at for developing countries like South Africa to help it, you know, leapfrog carbon-intensive development paths? And is it enough support, I guess, to not detract further from the already stagnant economic growth we're seeing?
Well, I think it's an interesting question, because one of the reasons that you have this stagnant economic growth is because the policies are not expansionary. So they are related. You know, if you have contractionary policies, as you have at the moment, stagnation is what is likely. But let's say, you know, how do we turn this around? It's a very good question. Well, you're absolutely right that it needs to be international and global support for this too. Because any country that does, for example, one thing would be tax revenues. So tax levels are very low, makes it very difficult for governments to get the fiscal resources needed for these investments. But who can raise their tax if their neighbors are not?
Yeah.
You know, so you need to have coordination on that. And in fact, we have some figures in the report that show that illicit financial flows are worth something like, I think it was $700 billion. It's a phenomenal amount of money that would be developed, that would be directed to development if we could just plug that.
Absolutely. Well, let's leave it there. Diana, thanks so much for having joined us in studio this evening. Of course, that's senior economist for the UN Conference on Trade and Development, Diana Barraclough.